Greetings, Scotch Potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Melissa Molina, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We have Melissa Molina, who has been on the Fat Guys Network before, because she did a second reel episode with us, oh gosh, 2 years ago, something like that?
Yeah.
Maybe, and it was about the Oscars, so it was almost a little bit over two years ago. But we have her back. We have graduated her to stage two, so she is... She's at the next level of fat guy-dom, although she's not a fat guy. She's a very nice-looking lady. Boy, I made you sound like an old person there, didn't I?
It's fine. It's like, fine.
It's like my grandma, my grandfather going, ah, she's a fine-looking tomato. we'll leave that embarrassment behind, and we'll go right to the paperwork here. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and reach us, and you can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys or Fat Guys Network, or if you search Kevin Carr, however you want to search, I'm sure you can find us somewhere. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM, and you can go to email us if you want to get in touch with us and give us your opinion or ask a question. You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. So you can check us out. That is how you get a hold of us. And now we have... Oh, you can also go to... If you want to get me on Twitter, if you really want to hear what I have to say every waking moment of the day, you can go to twitter.com/KevinCarr. But now I want to hear from Melissa. I know who you are. I know what you do. But let's talk to the audience. You haven't been on the show in so long. You've not been on the regular show ever. So tell us who you are, what you do, and how to get in touch with you.
I'm a freelance writer. You may have seen my work on several sites, including AMC Theaters, Latina Review, Collider, About.com, Shockya.com, and also part of Mike Sampson's new site, Screen Crush. It just started up last month.
Do you still currently work for all of those sites? Do you still feed content to all those sites?
Or yes.
Occasional. Wow. You're busy, aren't you? You said you do mostly interviews, right?
I do interviews, I do some reviews, and I also do a good chunk of movie news, especially with Screen Crush. If you go on there, you'll see me posting in the mornings and the weekdays. And I actually have a fun article that'll be up at some point this week. 10 things you didn't know about Marvel's The Avengers.
Oh, cool. Which I hear that's opening soon. Is that opening this week?
Yeah, it's a small little independent film. I don't know if you know the cast.
This little one, you may have seen them before doing stuff like The Pickup Artist. I think Robert Downey Jr. was in The Pickup Artist.
Yeah, Charlie Bartlett.
But yeah, this is it's great to have you on. And do you want to give your Twitter account so you can get people to stalk you?
Yes, people. If you would like to stalk me, you can follow me on Twitter at Melly_Molina.
Do you go by Melly, or is that just what you used?
Actually, some people do call me Melly. They call me Melly, M, Melissa, Mel. And then every once in a while, depending on who I'm talking to, I will be called Kitty, as in Kitty Pride. That used to be my nickname back in high school.
You are a big Kitty Pride fan. How many times you have a costume? You dressed in Comic-Con as Kitty Pride. Right?
Yeah, the last time I dressed up as her was 2007, 2008. It's been a while.
Same here. That's the last time I put on my Kitty Pride costume.
Aww. Put on that cute adorable little Excalibur costume.
Yeah, I was adorable. I got hit on. So many people hit on me.
Manfay.
Or wanted to arrest me, one of the two. It kind of blurs together for me. we should probably get to talking about movie reviews, because there's two movies opening this week. One is a tiny little smaller limited release that's for old people. That would be The Avengers. And then there's a big blockbusting film about old people living in India. So the first one we're going to talk about is the huge release, the one that's in thousands and thousands of theaters, The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. A group of senior citizens meet on a vacation in the rundown but charming hotel, in a rundown but charming hotel in India.
Welcome to The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Prepare to be amazed.
There's an Indian in there.
I want to stay at the other hotel, the one that's in the brochure.
In India, we have a saying. Everything will be all right in the end. So if it is not all right, it is not yet the end.
This is a new and different world. The challenge is to cope with it. And not just cope, but thrive.
Now, you haven't seen this. This one opened in Britain already. It's like the Avengers has opened overseas. And but you have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't. Is it actually the best exotic Marigold Hotel? Because if it's not, I'm going to be very disappointed.
Well, let's just say calling it the best is sort of like the blue ribbon on Pabst Blue Ribbon.
So it's the lukewarm exotic Marigold Hotel?
Apparently, in the history of the movie, it was at one time a great hotel, but it's somewhat ironic now. Actually, it's not ironic as much as it is just trying to be a vision of the future. This is the overselling point of it. The bit of the movie is these various senior citizens, they go to India from Britain, and they end up at this hotel that's trying to have a return to greatness, and it's run by Dev Patel, who we know from Slumdog Millionaire. And he, of course, oversells it to everybody, and he has, of course, oversold it in the brochure and that sort of thing. But it's basically a coming of age for old people, is a good way of putting it.
So it's that one segment in the Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah, they don't turn young again, though.
And it's not directed by Steven Spielberg.
No, it is not. It's directed by I forget who directed it. I'm totally sure. I think maybe like John Madden, not the football guy.
I was about to say, wow.
Yeah, he's like they're sitting there. They're like, what we need to do is we need to put points on that scoreboard and get that football in the end zone.
And everybody needs thick eyebrows. Exactly, thick eyebrows are the best.
See, it's the British John Madden because to him, football's something totally different. Those crazy British. But you know what? Here's the thing. It's a charming movie. I mean, it's got some great actors in it. It's got like Judi Dench, and it's got Bill Nighy and Tom Wilkinson. I mean, so they've got a great cast. And it's, you know what it reminds me a little bit of, like, it's like Calendar Girls without all the nudity. Where you have,
I don't know if you really want the nudity with this one.
No, I don't want the no. I don't need I do not need to see Professor McGonagall in the buff. But you know, like Calendar Girls, it is that thing where it is sort of an empowerment film for old people, but it's about people accepting where they are in life and that sort of thing. So it has that charm to it, but it also is very let's just say it's very cliche in many ways. It's for as somewhat unique and original of a movie as it is, it does fall into predictability extremely well, and sort of these deus ex machina moments where you're like, well, I saw that coming, you know, or that's the only way this is going to work out is if this happens, kind of thing. So when I saw the audience I saw it with was all old people, which is kind of like when I saw The Lucky One, and it was just like all like... It was either like college girls who were swooning over just a Nicholas Sparks movie, or old people on dates. I mean, it's okay for what it is. It's okay. It's cute enough. It's not my cup of tea. It's not for my generation. It's not for your generation.
It's not for mine either. Yeah.
Because you're like half my age. So
I'm a youngin.
Yeah. But I'm going to give it a kind of rocks just because I think it accomplishes what it sets out to do. But with that, we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, Avengers. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We were just talking about the best exotic Marigold Hotel, which is about old people. Now we're going to talk about hero people in the next movie, which I specifically got you to do this episode with me because of there's a lot of fans out there that I know, a lot of people who, and I'm not gonna use the term fanboy because you're not a boy, but there's a lot of people who love comic books in our field, and there's a lot of people who are very excited for the Avengers and that. But you are particularly excited, have a particular love for comic books, and I think that's actually ultra cool to get the female perspective on this, because I just don't want another bearded dude in his 30s to do this show with me. But we're going to talk about The Avengers, in which Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, The Incredible Hulk, The Black Widow, and Hawkeye join forces to fight the mischievous Loki.
War has started.
And we are hopelessly outgunned.
Director Fury, I think it's time.
You're here with a mission, sir? Trying to get me back in the world?
Trying to save it.
Doctor, we need you to come in.
What if I say no?
I'll persuade you.
What are you asking me to do?
It's called the Avengers Initiative.
Melissa?
Yes.
Have at it. Now, remember, this is going to be spoiler free. I want the audience to know. I don't want to. I've been complaining to people about not spoiling anything in this movie, and I enjoyed it probably better than I ever would have if I had it spoiled. So we are going to be doing spoiler free. We're going to be talking very general, and so no worries that we're going to, you know, tell you, you know, the secret ending where
hey,
Nick Fury comes
guess
and
what
asks
happens.
Nick Fury.
No. None of that.
Where Sam Jackson comes and asks Nick Fury to join the Avengers. Wait a minute. Anyways.
Actually, speaking of that, that reminds me, because I've seen the Avengers twice, because that's okay. How I roll.
Okay.
The first time I went and I saw it, a lot of us were figuring out, oh, I wonder what's going to be the big reveal at the end of the credits, because, you know, we had no idea. So I was going around everybody and saying, I know what's going to happen. Nick Fury is going to go, he's going to break the fourth wall, he's going to look at the audience, he's going to be like, this is our next Avenger, and holds up, like, the contract where Marvel went and, like, won the rights back for Spider-Man.
Oh. You know, that's interesting, though, is I don't know the legalities behind that, because they were able to bring the Hulk into this, and that's all Universal. Those were both of those films were developed by Universal. But Spider-Man, I'm wondering if partly the reboot is to help secure the rights to Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the same with that. It's the same with what they're doing for Fantastic Four and Daredevil and what they did with Ghost Rider, because it's like, after a few years, the contract expires. So they have to go in. And they're doing the same thing, too, with Superman right now. That's the reason why they rushed out and made Man of Steel. Because if they didn't go and film by the end of 2012, they would have to, the contract expires, and they'd have to let go of the Superman franchise, or the characters.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, yeah, it is funny to see where those go. And I do hope that, I love the fact, just in general, that Marvel Studios, as an entity, has come in and said, no, let's actually try to have some consistency and make a product that's bigger than a single movie. Because if you don't, what you do, because it's not just because Marvel's doing it. It's not that Marvel properties were doing it right, because people forget what was going on, you know, 10 years ago. I mean, yeah, the X-Men, both the first two movies were really good, and then you had, but then you give it to a director and you end up with Ang Lee's Hulk, which is an absolute incoherent mess of a film.
Yeah,
I just watched it. It's so, I challenge anybody to explain to me what happens in the last half hour of that movie. I mean, you can say what happens on screen. You can be like, oh, they have this fight, and then he turns into this, and something happens, and then there's a big explosion, and he ends up in Costa Rica. But that doesn't explain what happened. It makes no, and then, like, let's look at Moss. It's so incoherent. And the fact that the people who put the comic books together have some sort of control and say in it, that is a good thing. So.
Oh, totally.
But I mean, what's your take on the Avengers?
The Avengers. See, here's the funny thing about the Avengers for me. When it first began production, I seriously thought that it wasn't going to be any good. I was like, there's, and this is like off of like Iron Man 2, and I'm just like, I don't know if this is going to work. I mean, this is the Avengers. This is a monster movie. We've never really seen anything like this before, where they get several superheroes and cross them over into one film. I mean, it's a fanboy dream. It's a fanboy's dream come true. But at the same time, it's like, Christ, I don't know if this is going to work.
It's a bear trap. It is. It is. It was when I heard they were doing it, I was like, how are they going to link all this together? Because what ends up happening in a lot of these things where they do these ensemble pieces is it becomes, for example, in this one, it could have easily just become Iron Man 2.5 with a supporting
cast. I was so afraid of that, especially when I heard that, you know, Robert Downey Jr. had his hand in like the cookie jar, so to speak, like when it comes to like the Avengers, how, you know, he added some stuff and that first teaser trailer, and it was like, oh Christ, it looks like Iron Man 3. No, yeah. Come on, Whedon, what are you doing? But I was very surprised to find that the Avengers is everything that a fan and just general movie going audience in regards to like who've seen the previous films, it's everything that they would ever wanted and more, especially yeah. with the way that, I mean, I'm just going to say this right now, Whedon, wherever you are, Josh Whedon, you better go and you better have your hand in some of the writing for the next Hulk movie, because my God, the Hulk was amazing. I mean, everybody I've talked to after coming out of the Avengers both times, the first thing they said, oh my God, the Hulk. Wow. Like, they're just won over by the character. They're won over by Mark Ruffalo as Dr. Bruce Banner. And like, the great thing about the Avengers too is that everybody gets their screen time. You yeah. get even Agent Phil Coulson, even Black Widow, and even Hawkeye, who nobody really knows about, like in regards to non-comic.
They don't have their
fans.
Own movie. They don't yeah. have their own movie. Yeah.
You know, they have their moments. They have their moments in the big action sequences where it's like, whoa. Holy
yeah.
hell.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing is, I don't know if you know this about me, I'm not a big Joss Whedon fan. Most people listen to the show know this. I'm not a Joss Whedon fan. I've never been a Joss Whedon fan. I never got into Buffy. I hated Firefly. And Serena. Yeah, I know. People are like, what? How dare you? But no.
I know.
How
dare you?
I said this to somebody tonight when I saw the movie. I said, if you were to take and list the top 10 things about Firefly you love the most, those are the top 10 reasons why I hate it. It's just one of those things that whatever, everything that Whedon does that he completely has control over just rubs me the wrong way. And I've not seen any, I've not seen anything. I loved Cabin in the Woods, and he had a lot of hand in that. But which
is
odd because
that wasn't actually his film, though. He was just a producer.
And a co-writer.
Well, yeah.
I mean, but it didn't reek of Joss Whedon, but you could see his influence. And this movie, this is the difference. It didn't, to me, and to use a crass term, it didn't reek of Joss Whedon. This movie felt like Joss Whedon was heavily involved. It felt like a Joss Whedon movie, but I think the real strength of this is he wasn't creating his own universe, and he didn't have total control. And he's had such a long career outside of his tentpole pieces. He's had such a long career of making use of other people's characters with his work in comic books, and the fact he understands comic books is a good thing.
Oh my God, yes. And like, you know,
just his writing, just his general writing before he started doing Buffy. He was good at that. And so he could take the tone that was set in Iron Man and even the Incredible Hulk to a lesser degree, but both Thor and Captain America, he could weave that all together and make it work. And that's his real strength, I think, even for me, beyond creating his own little universe, but I'm in the minority on that one.
Well, I'm in love with the Whedonverse, as Robot Chicken put it at one point. No, I've always dug Whedon. And I, even though I was really weary about the Avengers at first, I did have a speck of hope, just because one of my favorite comics within the last 10 years is Astonishing X-Men.
I'm going to have to hold you for a second because we got to go to a break, but we'll talk more about that when we get to the next segment.
All right.
miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We'll jump right back into the Avengers discussion. Sorry I had to cut you off there. We were on a hard break there for the radio. But you were saying your favorite comic series in the recent years is what, the Astonishing X-Men? Is that what it is?
Yeah, the Astonishing X-Men, aka where he goes and puts Kitty Pryde front and center and brings back Colossus. And that, oh god, just, I want to take out my issue right now and go through it. Yeah. Just like how she just freezes when she sees him like beating the crap out of some henchman, and then he just runs through her. She lets him phase through her, and she's just like in absolute shock. But aside from that, yeah, no. Whedon knows Marvel. He loves Marvel, obviously. And, you know, he made what is Marvel's, you know, it's their crown jewel.
It is. And I think it took a... I was very... very nervous when I heard he was going to do it, because like I said, I'm not a big fan of his stuff, but I think some people, at least in my, like I said, this is not saying that he's bad when he's completely unrestrained to do his own stuff, because obviously he's got a huge fan base there. But the difference is, I don't think that there's mass, huge mainstream appeal to his stuff. Buffy was never a huge mainstream hit. Firefly wasn't. Serenity wasn't. He's a very niche director for his. He's very cult niche director.
Especially with you can't forget Dr. Horrible's Sing Along Blog, the thing that he did during the writer's strike.
Yeah, which was actually, you know what, I'll say that I liked that, although I hate Yay! Felicity Day. I hate Felicity Day. So, but I'm sure she's a lovely person, but I can't stand her as an actress. But no, I thought that was cute, and I thought that was neat. But yeah, I mean, he when he does his own stuff and it's all kind of taking place in that Whedonverse or his own version of the Whedonverse, it's very niche. But if you put constraints on him, he makes a fantastic product, because he has to work under those constraints. That a lot of that comes from his TV work. A lot of that comes from his writing scripts on commission that aren't just a script that he does whatever he wants, or they're like, we need you to write this or script doctor this. He works incredibly well under pressure and constraints, and I think it shows. It's sort of like what Brad Bird did with the Mission Impossible franchise.
Oh my god,
last
yes.
December. In fact, I have to say this, I haven't had as much fun in a theater since Ghost Protocol that I did when I watched the Avengers.
I have to say that normally whenever I watch a comic book movie, especially one that I'm like at least a teensy weensy bit excited for, I tend to compose myself to a degree because I'm at a press screening and, you know, I've got all the LA press sitting around me, and it's like, I don't want to come off as this weird fangirl who's like, oh my god, yes, punching the air and stuff like that. But when I saw Avengers, I couldn't help it. Like... You know, it was like 20 minutes in, and I'm like, you know what? Forget this. Are you kidding me? I'm
going to
go. Yes. I was that person who's like shaking in their seat, you know, like going, yeah, applauding during certain scenes. It's like, you can't help it. You just get completely swept up, especially in the third act.
Do you know Gray Drake? She's a critic out there in LA. You'd recognize her because she's got pink hair.
No, I don't think I've seen.
She was telling me when she saw Ghost Protocol, she said she was so excited during that, she just kept punching the guy next to her, was just somebody who was sitting next to her. She just started punching him in the arm when like really cool things happened. And he was like, they were all like totally into it. And they're like, bye. And then they leave. They didn't know each other. But that's what this movie made me feel like doing. It was everything that a comic book movie should be. And I cannot believe it took him this many goddamn years to figure it out.
I know, right?
As much as, I mean, I love the X-Men series. I even like Last Stand, I think. And then Wolverine, for what they are.
You like Last Stand? I have so many problems with that, just
because
purely
you read
because
the Dark Phoenix storyline.
Dark Phoenix Saga. It's mine. Love it.
Well,
so
you
much.
Know, here's the thing with me with Marvel. I was a DC guy growing up, but even then I was very limited. I was Batman, Superman,
Green
Lantern.
Well, I think that's how it is for everyone, especially people, or especially people who grew up in the 90s.
Older
and they
people?
Had like Superman, Batman, the anime series. Sorry.
Well, for me, what it is I could not afford to buy two whole, I couldn't afford two universes. I had to pick one. And, you know, because when you start collecting comics, even back in the 80s when I was 70s and 80s when I was really starting to get into them, you can't just do one storyline, especially once in the 80s they really started doing crossovers. So you kind of start just amassing more and more books that you got to collect. And so you can't just say, oh, I'm just going to read the X-Men. Well, if you're going to read the X-Men, you got to read seven titles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're going to read the Avengers, you've then got to read Iron Man and Thor and Hulk. You know, you got to read all those other things. So I kind of chose one. And so I went DC, and I've never been fully satisfied with DC movies. In fact, there's only really two that I really fully like. And I would say, like, unabashedly say these are really good movies. And that's Watchmen and The Dark Knight.
Even
Batman Begins, I wasn't wild about.
But I thought Batman Begins was a great starting point for what Nolan had in store for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, there's stuff that I was like, oh, I mean, it was good, but it still didn't reach the level of perfection that I think The Dark Knight did. We'll see with The Dark Knight Rises. I think there's maybe a little bit too much hype for that. But The Avengers is the one to beat this summer for best comic book movie and best action movie. But then, you know, when Marvel started making movies, I was vaguely familiar. I know who Spider-Man was, and as part of that's from just cartoons and watching old TV shows, because I remember the Spider-Man TV show. I remember the Incredible Hulk TV show. I remember watching that. So I knew who the characters were, but I wasn't completely vested in them. I didn't know their full history from the source material.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, when they did the first Fantastic Four movie, which I liked, and they completely changed Doctor Doom.
Oh, yeah.
I was okay with it, because that's what I knew. All I knew about Doctor Doom was that he had that mask, and that was it. So they completely changed it, but I'm like, I'm okay with it. Like, when Spider-Man could really shoot webs out of his arms, I was like, eh, well. And I've gotten arguments with people that go, no, it's his kryptonite. And when he runs out, I'm like, you know what? It makes sense. He can climb up fucking walls. Why can't he shoot webs? He's a spider. It's like, well, he should come out his ass. I'm like, really? Seriously? We're going to get to that level of argument? This is a real argument I had with somebody.
Nerd alert.
Yeah. So I... You can mess up the mythology, and I'm okay with it, as long as you don't like make the Hulk delivering singing telegrams.
Oh God, I can imagine that now.
Although I think that Hulk, might be pretty entertaining.
Hulk smash.
So I even don't think Marvel movies. I like the Spider-Mans. I like the X-Men, but I don't think Marvel really came into its own until Marvel Studio finally sat down during Iron Man, when they're making Iron Man, and said, okay, people, let's make this all consistent. Let's not just hand this over to whoever's going to put their fingerprints on it.
And total salute to Kevin Feige to go ahead and basically be the guy to make that decision and bring in Samuel Jackson, like he said in interviews, to do final scene in Iron Man. I mean, I remember, like, well, just because I went to the Friday screening of it, and then, you know, I'm sitting there, and then they show the scene, and, like, just as a Marvel fan in general, to hear him just utter the words Avengers Initiative, I wanted to rip a chair out of the movie theater floor because I was
that
incredibly excited.
You should have. It would have been so consistent with the film.
Oh my God, yes. Ever since we had that scene in Iron Man, everything that we've seen since then, just connecting all of the Marvel films together, the ones that Marvel actually owns, has just been basically a dream come true. And to see the Avengers, you know, to see them all formed around in that circle like that is just crazy. Just, you know, when I saw the movie, the crowd just erupts. It's just like, you know, it's like the answer to the past like few years of just watching all these movies. It's just to finally see that moment where they all get together and you know, start working together as a team. And it's just like, oh my God, thank you. Know,
and I'll say this, a lot of people malign Iron Man 2, and I don't. And I liked Iron Man 2. And having watched, I recently watched all 5 movies leading up to it, like over the last week or so. This movie would not have worked as well without, for all the scenes that people complained about with Iron Man 2, you know, kind of a diversion on a road kind of thing, literally, you know, at times. I thought that setup and what they did with Tony Stark's character ties into this movie more than it was. And so I always felt that Iron Man 2 served as somewhat of the S.H.I.E.L.D. origin story, and at least to introduce some of these characters and give them a little more to do, in particular, you know, Black Widow, introducing her and showing that there's some sort of connection there, you know, as opposed to like with Hawkeye, you just kind of see him in one scene in Thor.
Well, most people didn't even know that was Hawkeye or anything. They're like, oh, it's just some random dude who's got a bow and arrow in his hand.
Well, I didn't know until I remember seeing Thor last summer, because like I said, I don't follow the Marvel universe. So last summer when I saw Thor, I was like, what the hell is Jeremy Renner doing in this little bit part? That's literally what I thought, because I'm like, why is he, what is he going to, and then you never see him again. Then when I rewatched Thor like a week or so ago, I'm like, oh, I get it. You know? And that's actually what's brilliant about these, all the films, I think, all 6, if you include Iron Man to the Avengers, they work for people who read the comics. They also work for people who've never read the comics and the people who are just familiar with the characters. They work for everybody, and that's a genius. I think
you need that.
Yeah, because otherwise you'll end up with a movie that'll make $100 million worldwide.
Ghost Rider?
And well, I don't think that works well for anybody except, you know,
Nicolas Cage people, fans.
Well, yeah, even the Well, you know what? I'm going to use a Nicolas Cage. Now you mentioned Nicolas Cage. I'm going to use a Nicolas Cage analogy. For the Avengers. The Avengers is what Joss Whedon did with the Avengers is what Nicolas Cage did in his early acting career. If you go back and you watch Moonstruck,
he is
fantastic in that movie. Why? Because he had something to prove. He didn't go in with the name Coppola. He wanted to be taken seriously as an actor, and he got the part, and he acted. Now, he shows up on screen, yells a lot, gets set on fire, and does some crazy full cage rant, and that's considered acting. He has nothing to prove now. Joss Whedon had something huge to prove, and it's already paying off because it's made like $200 million overseas.
They said it's supposed to break like $500 by the end of the weekend worldwide. Yeah,
well, I can't imagine what we'll get into the box office predictions here in a second. But yeah, it's already clocking in at over $200 million already. And I think this thing is just going to crush the box office because it is something that everybody can watch. Because even if you don't know all the characters, you can be like, well, you know who the Hulk is, the big green guy who rages a lot. And Iron Man, everybody knows who Iron Man is. And even if you don't know Thor, because that's probably the lesser received one, it all makes sense. And the other thing I loved about it is they don't spend time rehashing everything. There's scenes in there where and like I said, I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's several scenes where you got characters talking and they're referencing stuff from the other movies. They don't take time to turn to the audience and be like, okay, well, see, in Iron Man 2, blah, blah, blah happened. And in Thor, blah, blah, blah. And this is their backstory. They just assume you know. And if you don't know, you know, you can still figure the movie out.
I think the only problem for me when it came to, like, you know, in a sense, kind of reintroducing the characters is how they do it with Captain America.
Okay, yeah. Well, and that was always going to be tough because the Captain America movie all take most of it, you know,
takes place
95% takes place in the past.
Yeah.
And, you know, so yeah, you're right. I mean, that was a little bit awkward, but I thought they worked through it well.
Yeah, though I'm part of the majority who wish that we saw a particular scene that they said that they would have had either at the end of Captain America or at some point early on in the Avengers. And I'm sure fans know what scene I'm talking about. It involves a date.
Ah. Okay, well, you can't have everything.
But I want everything.
I'll tell you though, with the other thing I think about the Avengers is not only should everybody go take a chance to see it, it gets a total fat guy's grade of totally rocks from me.
It's awesome.
Totally rocks. Did you say we do rocks? It sucks or kind of rocks? Kind of sucks. I'm assuming you're going with totally rocks.
Totally rocks Hulk's pants off.
That's right. See, everyone at my screening, people were showing up dressed. You know, they had like masks on. I just had my purple shorts on, and in the middle of the movie, I just ripped all the clothes off, and I hulked out in front of everybody.
Nice.
And then I was arrested. How did the movie end again? No, I'm just kidding. But I think not only should people go see this, I think every executive at Warner Brothers, every developmental person at Warner Brothers, and everybody involved in DC Pictures needs to go see this movie and see, and then they need to come home and ask themselves, why the fuck can we not do a Justice League movie?
Exactly.
You know, and the thing is, with all the legal red tape and the problems with joining these characters from different studios, because you're not going to get the Fantastic Four, you're not going to get Spider-Man. Oh, you might. I mean, sure, at some point they could, especially with how well the Avengers is, but then everyone, Sony's going to be like, well, I want a piece of the pie.
Yeah, and did you hear that whole thing about how Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, they could put them in the next one if they wanted to?
Oh, really? See, I don't know the characters. I don't know the minor characters.
Well, but the thing is, that can't really work as, or anyways, unless in the next X-Men movie, they finally go and put in the whole backstory of Magneto's past, where he goes and he hooks up with a human and knocks her up, and she has two kids, a little girl and a little boy, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, and Magneto's children, and...
Well, I don't necessarily think you have to have that in there. I mean, they can just give a nod to it, and they can mention it. Kind of like there's characters. Again, I'm trying to walk around any sort of spoiler information. There are characters from previous pre-Avenger films who do not show up, but they mention. There's one in particular. I'm not going to say who it is.
Yeah.
But and you can tell they're like, you know what? We didn't need to give this person a whole. We didn't need to devote any more of our 2-hour and 22-minute screen time to another character that is somewhat tertiary to the entire universe. So let's just mention this person and then we'll just move on. So, but I think they should. I mean, I really think because DC could have done this 20 years ago.
Oh, they easily could have done this.
They own the properties, but they were giving Batman to Tim Burton and he was doing his own thing with it. And then it went batshit crazy with Joel Schumacher. And they gave Christopher Nolan Batman, and Batman's the Dark Knight's fantastic, but I don't know how they could ever bring in Bale, the Bale Batman, into a larger universe with Superman. You could never. I just couldn't see that happening.
And it's like, you know, we've got Superman here, and we're going through two actors playing Superman within 10 years, yeah. And it's like, if there were a Justice League movie that was, say they greenlight a Justice League movie tomorrow, who are they going to cast as Superman? I don't know if they'd stick with Henry Cavill, you know?
Well, we won't know until next year if people, you know.
Yeah, well, those rubber suits aren't really turning me on to the movie, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, and if you look at the Avengers, just, we're talking 6 films and they've only recast 2 parts. James Rhodes, who was in the Iron Man movies, and Edward Norton was recast as by Mark Ruffalo. That's it. Everybody else is the same. I mean, I'm sure there's other minor stuff, but there's a real overall consistency to these films that when you finally see Avengers, you look at it and you say, oh, I get what they were doing. If you didn't already, you're like, okay, this makes sense. This is why it was important. This is why it was important to throw Sam Jackson in the beginning. I call him Sam because he's my buddy.
Yeah.
I don't know why I call him. I'm a douche if I do that. Like people call him, oh, Bobby De Niro. You don't
Bobby
know
Bobby De
him.
Niro. I've never heard anybody actually say that.
I have. I know somebody who would refer to people as their nicknames, and I'm like, you've never even met him.
Christ. Wow.
So when Bobby Downey comes in.
Bobby Downey. Oh, God.
when they put Samuel L. Jackson in the end of Iron Man, and then they threw him into Well, he didn't. The only movie he doesn't show up in is The Incredible Hulk, because that's. And then they throw in Tony Stark there, which were those were those same. Same
that's
summer.
One of my favorite. That's my favorite, like, kind of end of credits is just him going in, and yeah, being Tony Stark, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's so I'm very pleased with what's going on, and I think this to me is the movie to beat. Everyone's all saying Dark Knight Rises, and I'm like,
I'm not really won over by those trailers.
I haven't watched the second one because one of the things I did is I've avoided spoilers to this film like crazy, and I was actually getting on people's cases who were dropping spoilers, and I know, and there was one thing that was spoiled for me, but fortunately when it happens. I wasn't expecting it, so it still kind of worked as a surprise.
Nice.
So, but like I said, I avoided this, and I haven't been watching the trailers for Dark Knight because I don't want that spoiled. I don't want to see even little things, even just the general plot setup, because so many trailers are so spoilery. So I kind of want to go into the Dark Knight cold, because it was such an enjoyable experience to go in. Knowing only very little about the Avengers. So I'm hoping to repeat that with movies like Prometheus and The Dark Knight Rises. Men in Black 3, I couldn't care less. That's going to be awful. So, is there anything else you want to say about Avengers before we move on?
It's delightful family entertainment. Hulk does smash, spoiler alert.
Spoiler
and
alert.
You
smashing
will
going on.
Enjoy the smashing that Hulk does. Yeah. Everybody gets their deserved screen time. It's an absolute triumph, not only for Marvel, but also for Whedon, who is pretty much a cult figure, you know, especially with what he's done with Firefly, Buffy, even Dr. Horrible sing-along blog, which I can quote backwards and forwards, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah,
no singing. We're not going to have any singing going on during.
Oh,
this.
I could go and I could sing. I could sing the Captain Hammer's little song, or I can sing a few songs. I can sing. Yeah. Anyways, that's just me mumbling on. But yeah, go ahead and check out Avengers, and don't watch it in 3D because that's not worth it.
I don't know. You know what? I have to say, I saw it in. Did you see an IMAX?
No, I just saw it in 3D both times, and it's you know, I can see the effects, certain scenes it does work, but for the most part, it's just unnecessary.
Well, let me ask you this: Are you one of the anti 3D people?
No, actually, I'm fine with giving 3D a try most of the time. You know, sometimes it really works, sometimes it doesn't, But this time with the Avengers, it just doesn't really do much.
See, I disagree. The at least for what I saw, because I saw it in IMAX, the rep was nice. And they had two screenings to go to. There was one in the IMAX, one in just regular digital 3D. And I thought IMAX is such a great 3D experience because the screen's so big. And it's so. Although the only problem with the IMAX is since it's a blow up, it's not actually originated on IMAX. It at times the screen's so big, if you're almost too close, you can almost see the resolution. But I'll tell you, the 3D and IMAX, it's very immersive. It's so spectacular. I loved it in 3D, and I'm an unabashed lover of 3D. And there's only a handful of movies that I didn't particularly like the 3D. Thor, I didn't think Thor and Captain America were very good 3D.
They didn't need to be again.
Yeah. I thought Thor was too dark. They should have played with the contrast and the light a little bit better, especially in the openings scenes.
Especially
destroyer comes down.
Asgard.
Yeah, Asgard didn't quite it popped a little too much. But Captain America 3D, I thought it looked like a pop-up book. I thought it looked very flat within that 3D, you know, that especially the composite shots, the visual composite shots where you suddenly like, oh, there he is swinging, obviously 6 inches in front of the screen kind of thing. But I think you could go either way. I don't think the 3D takes away or not. I mean, I think it looks great in IMAX 3D. So if you're going to go see it like that.
Hmm.
And with that, let's go to box office. Last week, we had Think Like a Man have an incredible hold at 47%. and it beat out Pirates Band of Misfits, and which I loved.
I love that movie so much.
That was just such a clever movie, but I wasn't expecting it to do super well because it's always it was a little too British, I think, for some people.
Yeah, well, those people suck.
Yes, go see Pirates unless you suck. It also beat The Hunger Games and The Lucky One, which those two movies also beat. 5-Year Engagement, Safe, and The Raven. Now, nobody was expecting Safe or The Raven to do very well.
But Five Year Engagement.
It made $10.6 million its opening win. To put that in perspective, that is about what Mirror Mirror made in its second weekend.
Woohoo!
And Mirror Mirror was a complete flop.
Low blow.
Yeah, so that is... That would be the only thing that's going to save 5-Year Engagement is it's relatively inexpensive. It was like 20 or 30 million, so it wasn't a big, huge movie, which I'm fine with because having not seen it, I don't know if it's a good movie or not.
Yeah,
but I was, when I first saw the trailers for it, I was dreading. I'm like, oh shit, here's going to be the, and I'm sorry, a correction. Mirror Mirror in its second weekend did do better than 5-Year Engagement did its first weekend.
Ouch.
But I was like, when I saw that, I'm like, oh God, because Bridesmaid did well, we're suddenly going to get this onslaught of wedding, R-rated wedding comedies. And I'm glad that hopefully this will just kind of like slow that down.
But it wasn't entirely a comedy, or that's how I felt.
Yeah, I've heard that. They were pushing it as the next Bridesmaid, I think, more than anything else. Anyways, what do you think's going to go this weekend? Do you think
Avengers is going to destroy everything in its path?
I don't know. I have a feeling Think Like a Man might win it again. It might have a surge and make $250 million.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Watch out for Think Like a Man.
Yeah, there you go. Now, the big question is, what do you think? Are you into box office projections? Do you want to throw your hat in the ring as to what you think? Is it going to beat Hunger Games?
It's going to make $1 billion this weekend.
It'll make $1 billion.
$1 billion.
I once, back in 2008, when all the hype for The Dark Knight was coming in, I wrote an article for Film School Rejects that basically said, okay, if every screen in the country showed The Dark Knight round the clock, this is how much money it would make in the 3-day opening weekend. It was something like, $400 million. I go, that's what it's going to make. And it didn't make that, but...
But
Hunger Games made 152. Do you think that
on its opening weekend?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I can definitely see Avengers like busting skulls and box office wise and make something possibly even higher than that. Okay. I'm not really great with projections, so I can't give you an actual number. But okay. I definitely think it's going to break some records. Of course, with Midnight, because, you know, this is the Avengers. Come on.
Yeah. Well, let me throw these numbers out to you. The record, the highest opening weekend 3-day spread, was Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 at 169 million, and then The Dark Knight at 158, then Hunger Games at 152. I think it has a possibility to do the 150 million. It's got a lot of hype. It's getting fantastic reviews. It's got kid potential. It's got matinee potential. It's got adult potential. It's in 3D. It's in IMAX. So you get a bump of the ticket sales.
I think it's easily going to make at least 150.
I think 150 is a good bet. In fact, if you look back the same weekend 5 years ago, Spider-Man 3, which was whether you like the movie or not, Spider-Man 3 made $151 million on the first weekend in May. And if you look back at what, a lot of people will point to Thor as the opening weekend for last year. It really wasn't, because it was really kind of Fast 5. Fast 5 was seen as the movie of the weekend. And Fast 5 made $86 million its opening weekend. So I think that it's easily over $100 million for the Avengers, and yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it pushed it into the 150 million territory, especially with Midnight's and the fact that it doesn't have, even though there were four movies opening last week, it'll bump a bunch of things from the screens.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, and then what do you think is going to be number two? Do you think that Think Like a Man's gonna continue along?
I wouldn't be surprised. Like Avengers, Think Like a Man, Hunger Games, and then everything else.
Yeah. Well, I think it's gonna be like $10 million for Think Like a Man. I think it'll have a good hold, but
well, I mean, it's been doing great so far. I don't see it dropping off too much. I mean, they still have an audience right now.
Well, the big difference is that between this and, say, Iron Man, which made 90-some million its opening weekend 4 years ago, the Marvel, there's nothing against it. There is no counter-programming. They've been doing this lately where they throw in Iron Man opened against Maid of Honor, which did very well for counter-programming productions, and I think then the next year was like Ghosts of Girlfriends Past. So they always throw in romantic comedy.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see how Pirates is going to hold up, since that's basically the only kids' movie out there right now.
Yeah. I think it'll hold. It had a surprisingly good hold on the weekend. The early numbers were actually pretty brutal for it, if you follow somebody like Nikki Fink, who has wildly inaccurate numbers. But, you know, it's the only thing we got. But her early projections were like Pirates are going to be making $10 million or less. And it capped off at over $11 million, which isn't bad for an Aardman film. So I think that it'll hold pretty decently, especially as I think Think Like a Man and the Pirates are going to be good counter-programming. I think Hunger Games is going to take a hit, though. I think Hunger Games is going to have a hard time.
That whole audience is going to be watching The Avengers.
Yeah, because it goes for that, because it's one of those perfect four quadrant movies. So that's the official word: $1 billion for The Avengers.
Yes.
Think Like a Man, a close second with $250 million, and Pirates: Band of Misfits will hopefully get about 10 or so.
And then there's everything else.
And then everything else, and then John Carter with $68,000. -20. Anyways, we have. The Fat Guy Five. Was there anything else you want to talk about before we do the Fat Guy Five? Anything that's stuck in your craw? Anything that you want to sound off about?
Let me think. Yeah, no, not impressed by the latest Dark Knight Rises trailer. I know you haven't seen it, but yeah. I mean, I'm still not completely won over. It's like, we'll see. I don't know.
Okay, go on.
I'm one of those people who was really, 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 really hoping that The Dark Knight Rises was going to basically be like, you know, the second chapter of the Ra's al Ghul, Talia al Ghul kind of thing. And now, like, fanboys are going crazy with, is Joseph Gordon-Levitt Robin? Blah, blah, blah. Though, I would love it if, like, suddenly towards the end of the movie, Christopher Nolan is like, aha, and, like, turns him into Nightwing or something.
What would be great is if at the very end of the movie he shows up in, like, the green panties and the just the old, like, Burt Ward outfit. You have to be just this insane person show up and be like, Bruce, I'm going to be your sidekick. And he goes, and he just, like, shoots him in the face.
Just with that voice. Exactly with that voice. Like, man. I don't know. I'm just going to wait and see how it is with The Dark Knight Rises. I think a lot of fanboys are getting too crazy nitpicky right now. Like, Anne Hathaway doesn't look hot enough and stuff like that. It's like, whoa, hold your horses, man. We haven't even seen her say more than, like, a single line or two in this, you know, in these trailers. How are you supposed to gauge how good of a Catwoman she is by just, you know, seeing, like, what, 30 seconds worth of footage of her?
Yeah. Here's the thing with, this is my take on The Dark Knight Rises. And I'm giving him the same shot that I gave, I'm giving Nolan the same shot I gave Whedon and saying, impress me. Because here's the thing. I thought The Dark Knight, with the exception of that phone, the soul cell phone thing.
Oh yeah.
Like reading every cell phone in Gotham was a little goofy in The Dark Knight. I had a little problem with that. But other than that, I thought Dark Knight was a perfect movie, was a fantastic film, and a great superhero movie. that's hard to beat. Well, and I think that there's a lot of people out there who are just like, oh my God, Nolan, he could just take a poop on the sidewalk and I'd want to smear it in my face because it's awesome. Anything that comes out of this guy. And because I thought Inception was good, but I had some serious problems with Inception. I thought it was a cheat in a lot of times. And I didn't think it was as strongly written of a story as it could have been. And it was cliche. I mean, I'd seen the story before in Twilight Zone episodes. Plus, I'm not a big fan of Marion Cotillard anyways. I think she's sort of as boring as an actor can be in her not in her native language, because she just doesn't come across very well, in my opinion. So I am not in the category of Nolan can do no wrong. And I have yet to see anything about The Dark Knight that really says to me this is going to be rocking crazy. Whereas like last summer when the teaser came out and people were just jizzing all over the internet, I needed a Kleenex on Twitter just to get rid of it.
And it was just and it was the same thing like the teaser for just The Dark Knight. It's just audio and it's the Batman symbol.
Yeah, there's one shot that's new in it. And that was it. You know, so yeah, I was just like, so I think people are just like overhyping it. And I've been saying for better part of a year that I think The Dark Knight Rises will be a minor disappointment because people are expecting it to be as good as The Dark Knight. I just don't think it will be.
And like, I wanted to comment on the problem with the whole cell phone usage technique thing that he uses in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
The thing is, when it comes to the Batman, the Nolan's Batman universe, I understand that he's grounding it in reality as much as possible, but he can only do that to a limit. Like, and if he is, if Marion is actually Talia, then we're going into the whole, you know, immortality bit, like rejuvenation and all that stuff. And it's like, you know, yeah. I mean, just like with most of these superhero movies, after a certain point, you just it just goes straight into fantasy land. And there's no way to avoid it because that's just how these are written, you know? They're comics. They never judged like, I wonder how much the budget would be if I went in and I put this in outer space for 5 issues or anything like that.
Yeah. No, you're right. And I think there's to me, it was like that cell phone thing was the equivalent of in Batman Begins, Gordon driving the Batmobile. I was like, oh, seriously, you know, because I'm just like, that's just stupid at that point. And they do get it does overblow. So it could be a great movie, but I'm still holding out reservations. But I'll tell you, Avengers is the one to beat in terms of superhero movies this summer.
Oh, definitely. Next. Watch out, Amazing Spider-Man.
Next we have the Fat Guy 5, and I just want to just quickly rank for each of us, and it's going to be different lists, of course, but I'm going to give you my ranking of my, because a lot of people are watching the Avengers films leading up to the Avengers. This is my ranking of my least favorite, number 5 to number 1 of the ones I think in order. Number 5 would be Thor. I thought that was probably the weak, and all these I liked. I just thought it was the lowest of them all. So Thor, then Iron Man. I was never a huge fan of Iron Man. I liked it. I thought it was overhyped. Then Captain America, the First Avenger, which I liked a lot more watching it on home video. Then Iron Man 2, which I actually liked more than Iron Man 1, obviously. And it's I disagreed with a lot of people. And then The Incredible Hulk. And that is my favorite one of the five. How do you rank those?
I agree with you. Number 5 being Thor.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4... it would probably be Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
Wasn't a big fan of that. Then I would do The Incredible Hulk. I love The Incredible Hulk, but this is the point of where I start judging. Like, it's like, which child do you love more? This like the area I'm getting in right now in regards to ranking. And then number 2, I would have Captain America, the First Avenger, and then Iron Man would be number 1 for me. Because I love Iron Man. I was part of that. I'm slightly biased on it too. Like, I was automatically made to love it in a way as well, because I was there in Hall H when Favreau came out and, you know, he showed us the first clips for it. Because it's like, we never really seen them take so much time and effort into making a good superhero movie that was going to end up being part of this massive universe. And it was Iron Man 2. And it was like, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, how are they going to make Iron Man, like, totally awesome for all these people? They barely even know, like, who the X-Men are at this point in Spider-Man. And I was just already won over by that point on. And then, you know, I watched Iron Man at least. I think I watched Iron Man 2 or 3 times that weekend. I have to look at my ticket stubs. But yeah, no. And my little brother was totally transfixed on Iron Man 2. So, like, he wanted to watch it all the time once we finally got it on DVD. And yeah, so Iron Man is my number one. But Incredible Hulk is a very close second. I love Edward Norton's Hulk. I mean, there are some problems with the Incredible Hulk, but I think it's just so hard to put the Incredible Hulk and Captain America as number 2 and number 3, because it's like they're both really good films, and yeah. I don't want to put them lower on the list, but I have to.
Yeah, well, you have to rank them. Yep, yeah, it does that. Well, with that, we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk DVDs. Welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are finally wrapping up the show. We're going to be doing some less talk about the Avengers. We had talked more about the Avengers in the last segment and various other things, but yeah, most of it was the Avengers. It pretty much dominated the entire segment.
Of course,
because it's an awesome movie. It's the best movie of the summer. Of course, it's the first weekend of the
summer. It will literally melt your face off.
Yes, that's right. Next, what do we have coming up next here?
The world famous DVD roundup.
That's right. We've got there's a handful of stuff. There's nothing great. I mean, there's stuff that I'll go ahead and mention. It's New Year's Eve is out, and so is Joyful Noise, but nobody really cares about those. There's also Haywire is out this week. I liked Haywire quite a bit.
Oh,
it did not
I
do
love
well.
Haywire.
I thought it was it was the Ocean's 11 version of a rogue spy movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was just really cool. And the rest of the audience, the public, did not quite agree with me
because they're evil. Because
they're stupid. Yeah.
Yeah, you people are stupid.
Dumb people. There's also Pillow Talk, which is the 1959 rom com. I don't think they called them rom coms then, but it's with Doris Day and Rock Hudson, which is a charming little fun little film. You've seen that, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very, very sweet. It's part of the Universal 100th anniversary.
Yeah.
Where they're releasing on Blu-ray.
I was going to say, if you've seen Down with Love, which is basically Pillow Talk, then you're going to absolutely adore Pillow Talk for the people who haven't seen it.
I may have to at some point go back and watch Down with Love because I did not particularly like it.
Down with Love is very much Pillow Talk.
It is, but yeah, now thinking about that, it is very much Pillow Talk, but I've seen more of the sort of those screwball sex comedies of the 60s, 50s and 60s before you could actually make it a sex comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So I may have to check that out. There's also Covert Affairs, excuse me, the notes say Cover Affairs. Who typed that in? The idiot. Covert Affairs Season 2, that's the USA show. Also, Suits Season 1 is on DVD. That's another USA show. There's George Harrison in The Material World, which is it's Martin Scorsese's rockumentary about George Harrison. And there's also Get the Gringo, which isn't technically a DVD release. It's coming out, I believe it's exclusively to DirecTV, but it's Mel Gibson in his first starring role since Edge of Darkness. And it's his first starring role since his latest big explosion of hate. it's actually pretty good for a sort of a direct-to-video type movie. It's pretty good. It's a standard sort of. It's about a guy who gets stuck in a Mexican prison and was trying to find a way out so he can get revenge on the people and get the money that he stole that ended up putting him there in the first place.
Because you know Mexicans like me are evil.
Well, there's some good Mexicans.
Yeah, every once in a while, but most of the time you see us, we're the villains.
Well, you know what's funny is is, I wouldn't even say he's a good guy. He's just the protagonist, we'll say, because he's a criminal himself. It's not like he's not like a good person. He just isn't, he's not as evil as the Mexicans, because like you said, they're all evil.
Yeah, apparently I must be like evil incarnate, apparently. If we listen to Hollywood.
Do you have like an evil family reunion you attend all the time?
Yes. An evil family reunion in which half of us are drug cartel workers and the other half are maids and garden workers.
That's right. That works out really well because you keep a nice house. When you go home to your folks, is it like going to the Ugly Betty household where it looks like a Mexican
really
restaurant?
Where everybody's really kooky and we wear weird outfits and we talk funny. And
you have the Christmas lights that are in shape of bell peppers and stuff like that.
Because, you know, that's just how we roll, apparently.
And when you walk in, you hear, ay, 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 ay.
Yeah, and we're very cliched and we're very stereotypical. And
just like when I go to my Irish family reunion, everyone's drinking Guinness and fighting.
Yes, and they're all wearing kilts.
Yes, green kilts, because the other ones would be Scottish. Let's not be ridiculous here.
Well, there I go, mixing up my stereotypes. Oh, yes. What a
shame
Mexican
on you.
I am.
You stupid Brazilian. Anyways, the stinker of the week is neither Mexican nor Irish. It is We or W.E. I don't know whether it's We or W.E. I don't care because it's a terrible film.
It's Madonna.
It's Madonna, who is a great artist, just not in the film realm. She is telling the story of Wallace, what's her name, Wallace Simpson, isn't that the?
Yeah.
It is the most boring movie. It is all about it. It looks like somebody who came from the music industry who worked on a lot of music videos. Like, oh, let's make it look beautiful, but not really actually tell a coherent story or a compelling story, or plan to keep anybody awake.
When's the last time they've actually I'm trying to think of music videos right now. 90% of the time, it's just them like breaking the fourth wall, looking into the camera. And yeah. Just singing about whatever and just being in lavish kind of settings.
It's all the Kesha's TikTok overdone.
Anyways, to get that glitter out of my mouth.
Anyway, we'll end on that note. We're going to go the Avengers, the review wrap up. We both said the Avengers.
I thought you were going to go into totally Arnold Schwarzenegger mode. The Avengers.
No, the Avengers both gets a totally rock from us. Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, I said, is a kind of rocks if you're old. And next week, we're going to be talking about Dark Shadows. Thank you, Melissa, for being on the show. You got about 20 seconds. Tell us, remind everybody who you are. You know who you are. You're Melissa Molina. But yay. Where you can find you?
You can find me on Screen Crush, on about.com every once in a while. I also do stuff for Shakya.com, and you can find me on Twitter, Melly_Molina. Feel free to stalk me virtually.
All right. Thank you so much, and we will talk to you all next week.
Yeah, thanks.
Like the show you just heard? Then head on over to FatGuysAtTheMovies.com to hear more. Fat Guys Network flagship show, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The Idiot Boxers with Kevin and Merrill. Celluloid Spotlight with Merrill and Hash. And if you like any of what you hear, kick us a few bucks using the donation button on the sidebar. Or just leave us an iTunes review. Fat Guys Network is where the ooey-gooey podcasting goodness is at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.